Hello. You are listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves.
You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio hosts.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
This is all my half East Asian BFFs. Welcome back. If you're tuning in for the first time, we recommend checking out the other episodes too. But you can also just dive in here with us.
On this episode, Joe, Sumiko, and Daniela talk about how they were exposed to the two halves of their heritage growing up.
Hello, my half Asian, half white BFFs. How are you doing today?
Amazingly.
Fantastic.
Great. Some months ago, maybe it was years ago, who knows, COVID times, we had a bit of a party at home and we ended up in a room with just half East Asian, half white people. And we were like, this has never happened in my life ever. And it was like really lovely. And so kind of wanted to invite some of you back into the room so we can have some of those fun and poignant conversations that we had that time again, and maybe like, yeah, explore a bit further. So I'm really excited to have you guys here. To start off with, would you like to introduce yourselves? So Sumiko.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me. I'm very excited to have this discussion. It was a very fun, slightly alcohol-fueled evening. So my name is Sumiko. I am from Scotland, but I am also half Japanese and half British. So my preferred pronoun is she, her. I work for the Red Cross in humanitarian disaster relief. A bit about myself, I'm a mountain person. I know that there's sea people and there's mountain people. And part of my move right now is to be closer to the mountains. So that's just a bit about me. And I know Daniela and this other group of Asians through climbing and mountain stuff.
Yeah. I love that you say preferred pronouns she, her, but will answer to anything.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, yeah. I mean, I often get, which is part of the Japanese thing, actually, I often get a lot of he and him or hello, sirs in emails because my name is Sumiko. And obviously, especially in Europe language, if a name ends in O, it's often masculine. And if it ends in A, it's feminine. So I often get a lot of hello, sirs. So...
Interesting.
I'll answer to that also. It's
fine. In Japanese as well, isn't there less use of pronouns in general? Because usually you start a sentence with a name. Or am I wrong?
Well, you're starting to like dig into my ignorance of my Japanese culture.
Okay. Sorry, awkward. I'm going on a tangent anyway.
Okay, Joe, tell us all about you.
Hi, my name is Joe. I'm half Scottish and half Chinese Malay. And my pronouns are they, them. And I'm an editor at Third. I've been working with Third for about a year on all kinds of wonderful projects. And I also do a lot of art modeling. About me, I do lots of performance kind of circusy stuff in my spare time. So contortion, shibari modeling, anything that is wacky and quirky. I enjoy very much, or I at least want to try. So that's a bit about me. Thank you.
I didn't realize you were Scottish as well.
Yeah, I know.
This is like a double Venn diagram crossover.
I want to dig into in Scotland and how is that?
yeah, start. Go for it.
Aberdeen is where I was born, but my mom's from Crieff, which is like a little...
Yeah. I know it. Crieff Hydro.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm from Inverness. But I used to live in Aberdeen when I was younger, in Mary Cooter, just outside Aberdeen.
Don't know it.
No, no. It's like a little caravan park, basically.
Oh, cool.
Caravan lady. And I went to a tiny little school with like 5 kids and 1 teacher.
Yeah. Interesting. The education system up there is actually really interesting. My half-sister is a teacher in the Highlands.
Okay.
But she's also like half-Mauritian. So it's like interesting. She's in a really white environment, but she's black.
So you two would have grown up in really white environments and you two would have stood out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually didn't grow up in Scotland. I grew up in Sussex, but it was still very white. But it was also very liberal. Like, I wouldn't say that I faced much discrimination, like, racially growing up. I also have the benefit of being very fair-skinned and somewhat racially ambiguous. People always think that I'm different things. So either they'll clock that I'm mixed or they'll think I'm fully Asian or fully white.
Yeah, I had that a bit as well. Yeah. I mean, I do have that constantly, not a bit.
So it's hard to know if I'm actually white passing or not, because everyone reads it differently.
I've never had the white, but the mixed or the something else. Sometimes Asian, sometimes Indigenous, North American or South American or something. My sister in particular, she looks like she could be a Latina or Spanish.
Yeah,
or something.
My sister's the same.
Yeah, so mixed, but in general was a very white town Inverness. But again, not in a bad way, just... It was just there weren't that many, the much diversity up there. It's kind of interesting because we had I can name at the time all of the ethnic families. We had a little ethnic minority group there where we were to kind of hang out and cook each other food and invite white people in to try all the different ethnic foods.
Oh, wow. So you actually had a bit of a community.
Yeah, we had a community. Yeah. Oh, okay. So I know that. Like there was the my half Japanese, like me and my sister, and then my cousin whose cousins were half Japanese, half Scottish. And then there was Yusuf, black Nigerian, and then there was my other friend who was from Pakistan, and like I knew all of them. I mean, I think it's a little bit more diverse now, but when I was in primary school, it was like everybody knew who the two black people were, who the two half Japanese were, who the Chinese were, who the everyone was.
Oh, that's quite nice.
Yeah, it's quite fun.
Yeah, no, there was no like sense of community among like ethnic minorities in my area. He was like, we accept you.
Yeah. But Inverness is quite small. Sussex can be quite big, no?
Like, yeah, but I grew up in a small town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in China and so I'm half Danish, half Chinese. And apart from a few really small periods when I spent some time in Denmark as like a baby or like a 3-year-old, I spent the first 13 and a half, 14 years of my life in China. And I, for all intents and purposes, thought I was a Chinese kid until I moved school in year one between terms. Which is like, why did I do that? Why did my parents do that to me? And I arrived, and then like after class one day, first day, like all these little kids were like outside of our class, like kind of like looking in, like something was happening. And I was like, oh, what's going on? And they were like, oh, the foreign kid is here. And I was like, who's that? / oh, it's me. So that was kind of like my experience because I think, yeah, I grew up in northwest China near the Tibet, and it was like very, very like there was hardly any foreigners at all. In fact, yeah, there was like two families there who were not from there. Well, there were loads of people who were from other parts of China, but yeah, definitely like my dad and this... And I like stood out wherever we went. Like, yeah, I mean, after a while we were accepted. Not accepted, but like, it was
tolerated.
Like, whatever. Yeah, tolerated.
Ignored.
Yeah, ignored.
Dismissed.
Finally, alone at last.
All you could have ever wanted.
Yeah, but yeah, that was my experience growing up.
Yeah, I also remember the first time when I realized I was... Well, I cognized that I was mixed because I always saw myself as totally white and also totally Chinese.
Mm.
And I saw myself as Chinese as opposed to Chinese Malay for a really long time as well. But I was auditioning for this casting, or I think I saw this casting online or something. And I remember saying to my sister, oh, they're looking for Chinese kids. Like, we should audition. And she said, we're not Chinese though, we're mixed. And I was like, oh, like, what do you mean? Like, and then I realized, oh, like, I'm actually not considered fully Chinese. But until then, I just thought I was fully both. Like, to me, that's what biracial was. You were like wholly both races. But then I was suddenly like this split of like, you're not really either. That was the first time I felt that.
So interesting. You felt like you were like a double exposure.
But... yeah, kind of, because I knew I couldn't audition for white roles either.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah. Mm,
interesting.
I don't know the first time I...
You had a story, Sumiko, about that time you're on a plane and you realised you weren't white. Am I misremembering this?
This is true. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Yeah, okay. So I think I was travelling. I was actually going to India to do
Can't wait.
And I was meeting up with a friend there. And I can't remember. I know the story and I know the feeling, but I can't remember. I said something to my mate. And I basically said something like, it was something like it was a very white queue or something. And we were arriving in India and I expected it to be more mixed and more cultured. And it was just a very white queue. And I'm like, oh, just everyone's just white here. And then my mate who was from Pakistan, he said, well, we're not. And I'm like, oh, we're not. Yeah, you're right. We're not. But we were both mixed race. And I think it was just like, oh, I'm the ethnic in this queue of white people arriving in India, where I kind of didn't really clock it. Being like, I just assumed like I was one of these white people in this queue getting onto the flight or something. But yeah, I wasn't. But I do remember, because I think as a kid, I never really noticed it that much. Children are just children and you just, I don't know, I didn't think about it that much. But then I remember going home to Inverness, maybe second or third year in uni with Ali, who's my husband and very, very white, half Scottish, half Welsh. And then with my friend Yusuf, who's Nigerian. He was born in Scotland, but both of his parents are Nigerian. And it sounds like a joke, but we went into a bar in Inverness in Scotland, and then we just walk in. At that time, Ali had a skinhead, and then there's my Nigerian Yusuf, and then Japanese, Scottish me. And then we just walk into the bar, and the whole bar falls silent and just turns around, and it's just like what are we seeing? And there was no like negativity or no like judgment on us, just a fascination. Like I guess you said, Daniela, about those people coming to look at you in your school, and like, what are they looking at? Oh, me. Like, and it was just that thing of everyone's looking around like, what is happening? Who are these people? So that was also kind of quite interesting coming back from uni when I was just like, oh yeah, I am different here in my hometown.
Yeah, it's funny how your relationship to race changes based on who you're in a room with as well. Because if I'm in a room with completely white people, I'm always like, oh shit, I'm the most ethnic person here. Yeah. But if I'm in a room full of like POC, I'm like, I'm the whitest person here. Either way, I'm self-conscious.
Apart from in this room.
Yeah, apart from in this room. Yeah.
So let's talk about our exposure to the two different cultures. And I'm hesitating to say two because obviously... wherever you are, there's multiple different cultures interacting with each other. But let's just try that. But yeah, your exposure to, I mean, where Northern European culture and East Asian culture growing up, what are some notable stories or feelings that you've had about this?
I didn't have much exposure to either. I always wanted more exposure to my... East Asian side, but my dad knew a lot of Asian dialects and didn't teach me any of them. And I think this is something I see in a lot of first generation immigrants, which is where, in order to assimilate to a culture that they've moved into, they'll then kind of, they will abandon their own in a way, like they won't carry it through necessarily. And they also don't see themselves really as victims of racism. So whenever you bring up racism to them, in my experience, often it's, oh, well, like, this country's great. This country has given me so much opportunity. And it's almost like they've hardened themselves to it in a bid to survive. So I think for that reason, my dad didn't bring much of the culture into my household. It kind of extended as far as I got money on Chinese New Year, and that was nice. My mom spoke with a Scottish accent, but I never saw myself as Scottish or I grew up in England, so I saw myself as more British than anything. I didn't see myself as English, but I didn't really see myself as Scottish either. I didn't feel an affinity to either culture really. the only reason it was relevant to me was because people viewed me as that sometimes, and that impacted how they behaved with me, or, you know. But other than that, I was socialized in a completely white way. So all of that was kind of secondary, as opposed to something that I grew up with.
What was the... So your dad didn't speak any of these Chinese dialects with you, but what about food? Or like, did you have a moment where you became more interested in Chinese or Malaysian culture and you started digging in it, or you're just living your life and it just, whatever, you know, your influences are the things that kind of, yeah.
Food-wise, my dad was a very good cook. I mean, Malaysian cuisine is kind of like top tier anyway, and everyone knows it. He was a very good cook, but everything he did also had like a kind of Western slant to it. It was always that integration in everything. There was never anything that was purely East Asian, and it hadn't been Westernized in any way. After I went to Malaysia when I was a teenager a couple of times, then I kind of appreciated it more. But it took me seeing it to actually give it any weight. I always just thought it was kind of a fun fact about me that I was Asian. Hmm. I didn't see it as anything significant or meaningful. It was just kind of something I pulled out of the bag when people wanted an introductory sentence about me. I'm Chinese. And everyone would be like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of genuine interest for a long time.
Has that changed?
Yeah, it has. But even now, I don't really know how to bring that back. Because if it's not something that's passed down through generations in your family, it's kind of something that's difficult to pick up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I lived in England without any relatives living around us. We were very insular as a family. And it was just my parents, my sister, me. And there was no kind of extended familial connection there. So, you know, I kind of just associated my Asian side with Catholicism and pressure to assimilate in that way. My dad always wanted me to get confirmed to the church and et cetera, to make the relatives happy, but always kind of this social pressure and idea of conformity. So I think I felt a desire to escape that more than anything for a long time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I find one of the things that sometimes I slightly struggle with is that there might be some aspects of Chinese history or culture that I want to learn more about and dig more into. And even though I grew up there, having lived so long, like 16, 17 years away from China, then my trying to find out more about it, like I can speak to my mom about it, ask her questions, but then some aspects I feel like I'm almost like, yeah, a total foreigner, Westerner, like Googling shit. And yeah, it's like, yeah, that feels really weird.
Yeah.
But then just have to get over it, I guess. But yeah, I get that feeling sometimes. Yeah. What about you, Sumiko?
I think mine was slightly different because my mum, I guess, wasn't a stereotypical Japanese. She was a pretty wild Japanese person. She's not like what you would think of as a stereotypical Japanese lady from who married an English man. I think what was nice for me in terms of that Japanese side, so my mum and my dad were always massive travellers, even before we were born and after we were born, we travelled a lot. So we've always experienced quite a lot of different cultures, and obviously one of the places we travelled a lot was Japan. And they met travelling around the States, and they basically met this fairy tale love story that went behind it. But then what was quite nice is my dad's brother then met my mum's best friend and they got married. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So my auntie, so my uncle, my dad's brother, and my auntie's my mum's best friend. And we lived in Scotland in Inverness together. So that Japanese kind of culture side of things, I kind of soaked up a bit more because of my auntie and my mum speaking the language together, cooking together. Just,
yeah,
that side of things. So what you said about not having that like family around, I kind of had that around, so I got a lot. And even things like, they were from this same tiny, tiny, tiny island off Tokyo Bay called Izu Oshima. So the island itself is very unique, and like different parts of Japan, like North Island, South Island, are very different culturally as well. And this island is like a very rural island. It's a tiny island. It's like 4 hours you decide to drive around. It's a volcano. It's like those beautiful black sandy beaches. And so whenever we would go back to visit relatives, we would go with my auntie, my mom, and my cousins as well. So I have two younger cousins who are also half, like they're 10, 11 years younger than me, but we kind of did quite a lot of stuff as a family, which was quite nice. So we went to Japan like every 3 years or so to see family, which was just great fun. And so I picked up a lot then. I mean, I was still different, and it was quite funny because, like I said, the island was tiny and there was no foreigners or anything like that, apart from us mixed kids and then my uncle and my dad, who are like these white guys who just kind of arrived on the island, and they all knew who we were. You're like, oh, you're the Anzai family, because we know that. So it was quite fun. I really enjoyed going. I think it enriched my... I really enjoyed my Japanese side and going to the island, because it enriched my experience, like, just... in general, quite a lot. And I really enjoyed the contrast between this little tropical island and being in Scotland. So this tropical island, like a day, we would get up at 5 a.m, go to the field, chase the monkeys away from the watermelons, and like pick the watermelons and the corn on the cob, and then just chill out, maybe go fishing in the morning and then make some sashimi. And it was all just quite interesting. So I really enjoyed the contrast quite a lot. And I did and I didn't fit in there at the same time in a kind of fun way. Like my grandmother in particular just shouted at me constantly, because in Japan there's quite a lot of rules with things you can and you can't do and you should and you shouldn't do. And because I was the oldest sibling, anytime my sister did anything wrong, I would get shouted at because I should know better, because I'm the older one and I don't know all these Japanese rules. So it was quite interesting, tiring, but interesting at the same time, because I didn't know all the rules and I had to like kind of pick them up.
Did you ever feel like, other than the sense of, because Japan has this culture of seeing racial purity as very desirable, did you ever like feel any consequence of that?
No. I think, I mean, we spent a lot of time on the island rather than a lot of the bigger cities, mainland. And I think a lot of my mom's friends and the people we hung out with as well were quite liberal, travelled a lot, had lots of interesting experiences. The fact I was with my mum, who married a British man, and my auntie, who married a British man, and then, yes, so no, I didn't. My sister later went to live in Japan for a year, and she said that she did feel it a bit more as an adult, maybe. But when I was a kid, I didn't feel it so much. But
Yeah.
Or maybe I just didn't notice it so much.
Yeah.
Quite a deep topic to bring up with a 5-year-old, I guess.
Yeah. A 5-year-old who only cares about the monkeys and the beaches.
Do you ever feel ostracized? Are you aware that racial purity is really huge in Japan?
Imagine. Yeah, so interesting. I feel like on my side, I was always, I guess, because my dad's very Danish, I don't even know what that means, but like he is very Danish, and I feel like he just brought his culture into the home and, you know, encouraged me to read books, or he talked about the books that he was interested in, or etc, etc. And I feel like you, Sumiko, I visited Denmark a few times when I was young, not like every 3 years. Is that what you said?
Yeah,
maybe not as much as that, but like something in a similar. When I was like, I want to say like 10 or 11 or something like this, I went on a trip. So I was in a Chinese school and there was a trip to go to Sweden, a school trip to go to Sweden. Very random, very, very random. And I remember that trip was like quite a turning point moment for me, because that was like, instead of like going on holiday to visit my grandma, it was like I went to a sort of like environmental convention where there was like loads of school kids from all around the world joining, but like in Sweden, and mostly it was like Swedish schools, I guess, or like definitely European schools. And there was this feeling of like a very different culture, a different way of living and school and whatever. And then when I was back in China, I was like, oh, that's very, very different. But yeah, I guess like As you were talking, Sumiko, about the thing of like kind of broadening your understanding of the world, etc., I definitely feel like as a kid, it's quite confusing at times, kind of marrying the two very different ways of like living, or like just even the physical environment, the smells and the different type of like food products and like produce or whatever. But then at some point, as you get older and more experiences, like things click into place and you're like, oh, that's actually really cool. I've had these experiences from such a young age, which has like really primed me to be open to different cultures, whether it's like as big culture like Chinese or British or like small cultures like people from this area or like people who do this type of work. Sort of like, yeah, I think that was... And like movies, I don't know, it's weird to talk about movies, but like I watched a lot of movies growing up as a kid, like definitely watching movies rated not 7. and that kind of like, yeah, I can still transport myself to a place where like watching something quite like mundane film and feeling like that was really alien, but like now that is my life here in London. Don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I never watched Japanese films or anything like that, really. So the films were always British Western films for me, which I was living. So the film thing, not so much. But I do think like the visiting Japan a lot, experiences of different cultures and stuff really did help set me up for a lot of, I mean, what I do for work even. Like, I have that drive to go and experience new cultures. I do find that it's enriched my life having this half Japanese side of me and the experiences that I had there, and then this half Scottish British side of me. And I do appreciate it a lot. And obviously, it's part of like the traveling thing that my parents just love traveling and experiencing new cultures as well. But I do think that that's one side of it, but the actual being half something else, that kind of gives me a bit more understanding and has really driven me to do work in the international sector, not just in one place. I do think being mixed has really driven my career a lot as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the things that I find difficult slash also interesting now is that obviously China and the Chinese identity is something that's like China's like change constantly changing so much at the pace that like it's so hard to keep up with, has been for the last 80 years. But now that I'm away, I think one of the things that I find hard is like holding on to my Chinese identity that in a way that isn't frozen in time. And I think that's probably quite impossible to do. But I try to speak to my cousins in China if I can. And like my mum, she's very plugged into what's happening. And we talk a lot about like literature and stuff like this. And I think, yeah, whatever is your version of keeping in touch with the cultures that you resonate with and are interested in, that's fine. I think that's kind of where I am now. Like I try to cook. I love cooking and make a lot of Chinese food, and I try to read Chinese books. Have been trying. Haven't done that for a few years now. But yeah, just being okay with like whatever version of that it is to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that being mixed has also, as Sumiko was saying, driven my desire to travel as well. I'm going to Vietnam soon, and I kind of want to, I suppose, indulge in that culture more. And especially as, like, so much of my family history was in those areas. But it's also interesting because my dad, despite being Chinese Malay, has never been to China either. So there is, like, a disconnect there as well. So I don't know if it's something that kind of passed down generations in that way too. But yeah, a lot of my cooking is also Chinese inspired. And I always think whenever I want to get away from everything, the first place I think of escaping to is East Asia before anywhere else. So I don't know. Sense of home is difficult. I never really felt like I had a strong sense of home, and I still don't necessarily feel like I do, but there is some kind of root there that is a pull.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, how about you, Sumiko?
I'm Scottish, I think. I mean, that's my identity. And anyone asks, say, yeah, I'm half Scottish, I'm half Japanese, but where are you from? I'm from Scotland. And that's my identity, the Kayleys and the mountains and the cold and the rain and all the clouds. Yeah, I'm definitely Scottish. But I do really enjoy my Japanese side, my exotic side and the experiences that I've had and where I come from. And it has enriched my life, but I still feel very Scottish. So yeah, I think that it's slightly clearer for me. So what I think was interesting is what Joe said about their sense of identity. They basically didn't have this sense of whether they were Malay, Chinese, or from Scotland or from Sussex. Whereas for me, I definitely have that sense of being Scottish. Half Japanese for sure, and that feeds into a lot of my identity, but I would still say I feel Scottish in terms of my roots and my traditions and that side of my life. But I also kind of like the ambiguity. Nobody really knows what I am, and I think it's quite fun. People meet me and you can see in their eyes, like whenever I say, hi, where are you from? I'm from Scotland. They're like, oh, but where are you really from? And what are you though? So I quite enjoy.
And depending on your mood on the day, you'll leverage it for evil or for good, right?
Yeah. Sometimes I can be a bit cheeky. Daniela's experienced this before. But I quite enjoy that I'm quite clear on what my sense of identity is. And I quite enjoy how confusing it is for other people.
Cool. So that's just about all the time we have today. Any listeners out there who have their stories, half East Asian, half white BFFs out there, if you've got some fun stories about how you were exposed to different cultures or you resonate with some of what we're saying or disagree with some of what we're saying, please feel free to get in touch. DM us on Instagram at thirdmagazine3eyes or email us at info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three eyes. We'd love to hear from you and we'll read out our favorite responses on the bonus episode.
Do you know, one of the things that stood out to me, I think it was Sumiko who was saying their experience of walking into a bar and it going silent. And that actually happened to me and my university friends in Canterbury. So we were a really mixed crew as well. We had ticked all the boxes, one Asian, one Ghanaian, one Nigerian, Serb, who's like South African, English. And, you know what I mean? All the boxes were ticked. And for jokes, Serb and my friend Christabel was like, let's walk in holding hands just to see what will happen. And we went to the University of Kent, Canterbury, but this would have been like a more remote part of Canterbury, one of those back roads, and the room literally went silent, and it was too much. So I think that experience of that cultural melting pot for some parts of the UK is still a new thing. So not even just the UK, but even if you go to, I know I've heard stories in like even Portugal and places like that, you know, it's still a bit of a shock for some people. But I do think in time, hopefully that might change. But that was a funny story that I was like, I completely relate.
Yeah, Sumiko also said something about her grandma being quite harsh on her when her sister would get things wrong. And I was like, you know what? This is like the perfect example of how cultures can clash in really potent, but also like subtle ways. When you are someone who grows up in a different space, you might get an aspect of the culture, but maybe you don't get those cultural traditions which are tied to respect. And I can just like completely relate to what it was to have been like for Sumiko, especially being like a young child, just being like, I don't understand what's going on. When she said that, I was like, yes, this is a perfect example, and one that I think I could also like maybe compare to some of the things that goes on in like my own sort of cultural background, a Nigerian sort of background, these sort of social etiquettes that it would just be impossible for you to fully like get in the same way if you haven't lived and breathed that culture. And it's weird because then these things do automatically make you feel like you are off where it is that you grew up.
I felt that for Sumiko, but also I felt that for the grandma. So in a sense that, you know, they see their grandchild a couple of times a year, and there might be a level of despair or worry that certain things that they hold to such high esteem is not being passed on, or, you know, that they have a responsibility to make sure they know that that cultural heritage kind of tradition or practice, and that the emphasis that they need to keep uphold it and keep it and pass it on. So I felt like I maybe heard more the level of anxiety of the grandma in that story, but at the same time, I can also really empathize with how Sumiko might have been like, but I don't know this. Like, why is this being put on me? Why is the mistakes of, you know, my siblings or behavior of my siblings being put on me? But I felt like it was a very interesting reflection of some of the pressures that might be felt on both sides. I think to your point, Rona, about, Nigerian heritage, I do think we're constantly coming into conflict with that. Even though we're based in the UK, and even our parents are raising us in the UK, there's certain things, like I remember as a child having to genuflect and kneel and in front of certain elders, or elders as they say, to show like a level of respect when you greet them, and that being really kind of emphasized as like, but until I got into like maybe 16, 17, 18 kind of thing, that like this is something you need to be doing, but nowhere else, like no one else that I've come into interaction with outside of like, let's say Yoruba, or even some like Igbo relatives, like outside of those kind of groups, no one else is doing that. But that's being pushed and pressed upon me to kind of uphold that like respect for elders and genuflecting and having a level of reverence when I greet them.
Mm. And I think you are right as well. I can see that from the grandma's perspective, that is what she knows, right? Mm-hmm. That she wants you to be part of her culture. So she's almost like, I can understand that maybe she would want to make sure that, or that her granddaughter would know, or have that expectation of her granddaughter, because also that was probably placed on her.
Yeah. Do you know what though? Sumiko's description of how her time in, did she say the little island or in Japan, right? Just sounded so angelic. I was like, that is like a childhood right there, you know, just fishing, just chilling, like, and just really being in nature. I love that.
Yeah, it sounded lush. There was something Joe said about them feeling fully English and also fully Chinese. And when they said that, to some extent, I was like, but you should be able to feel that way.
I agree.
Can't really justify why, but just makes lots of sense to me still.
Yeah, I literally made the same kind of mental note in a sense of like, what is this idea of being half? You know, especially like if you have been raised by someone who's fully imparting their like cultural, you know, heritage onto you, and another parent who's doing the same, you're not necessarily getting half, you're getting fully the experience. And then when we talk about half as well, culturally, when you're raised in a different country as well, like let's say if you are like me, like both my parents are Nigerian and I'm here in the UK, can I be considered half Nigerian because I'm getting fully imprinted by the British culture? Like in my idea of like what half is, for me, I was just like, no, Joe, you're fully both of those things. And I just think our society's idea of what half is, it's a bit weird.
Yeah, I think for especially for people who are racialized in their appearance,
100%.
Obviously, I think Englishness in particular is a very protected sort of identity, and that usually comes with the sort of, you know, precursor that you have, you look white. Mm-hmm. But being British or living in Britain or having an English parent makes you part of that country, the country's history. Mm-hmm. So why would you have to be so specific about how you fit into it?
Mm. Yeah. Another thing that I thought was quite interesting is how Jo stated how their relationship to their cultures changes depending on who they're speaking to or what room they're in. So that was quite, for example, if they're in a room with people that might be more English or Scottish, or, you know, it might impact the way that they would express themselves and navigate. They might emphasize other heritage to make themselves maybe different, or maybe they might kind of, not Joe specifically, but anyone, try and emphasize how similar they are to the people in the room. And I think that idea, and it was a kind of constant theme throughout all the episodes, as you'll hear, is that it does give, to some extent, a wide breadth to navigate the world, but then sometimes there's limitations.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, thirdmagazine.co.uk. Also with free eyes.
And don't forget to help spread the word. Share the show with a friend, a colleague, your mum, or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
All of the music you've been hearing on this show is from our guest Reese's record label, Emperor Recordings. If you search them on Instagram, their logo has a dog in it. Follow them and go to their parties.